Your flagship station for the Beam Team, Sactown Sports.
Does it get any better? It's Friday, of course. The Kings won last night, and best of all, the preseason is over. Woo! It is all over. We get ready for regular season basketball. Thanks for being with the Drive guys, Kevin Gleason and Kyle Draper. We have Drape's takes coming up in about 10 minutes. Looking forward to that. But Drapes, last night, I know you were there. Was there a sense of relief, or was it just, ho-hum, let's get on with the regular season?
No, I think there was a sense of relief. I think you could tell the fan base, the players, they wanted that game last night. And I was thinking as I'm watching it, that statue pulled up yesterday about no NBA champion has gone winless in the preseason. I'm like, come on, Kings. All we need is one. We just need one. And the squad got it. They got it done last night. So I think it was a sense of relief, a sense of you know, there were like the Beam chants in the building. It was a party out there last night.
You know, I hate to go here, but we gotta clean this up first thing here. Yesterday, we made some predictions about who was gonna be the leading scorer, and I don't think that's not one that you are gonna.
Nah, I didn't get that one right. I got that one wrong. You know, unlike you, I don't go for the low hanging fruit. You know, I like to go out on a limb.
There
you
was
know,
no like low hanging fruit.
No,
yesterday.
You could have said Malik Monk. Who did you say? I forget.
I believe I said Colby.
But it's low-hanging fruit, the flavor of the day, the flavor of the month, Kobe Jones.
At least
that's low-hanging fruit.
Okay, at least the guy I picked is still on the team.
Because I wanted to give my guy some love, you know what I mean? His name has not been mentioned at all in the preseason. I'm talking about Jalen Noel. And so I was like, you know what? Let me think outside the box. You know, Whitey, when people zig, Drapes zags. That's what I do. And so I'm going to go a different route. And
okay.
I'm okay with being wrong.
Good.
I'm securing myself.
Yeah. Well, I think was it Dave Lack pointed that out on it?
Yeah.
So we had to circle back to that and acknowledge
that.
Can I
just say something, though? And Dave Lack, I know you're probably listening. He's my guy. But watching a game as a fan in person and actually checking Twitter, I may not check Twitter during games anymore. You know why?
Why?
Because everybody's an expert on basketball during the games on Twitter. It's like everybody has an opinion. Everybody knows what Kevin Huerter should be doing. Sasha should be doing. What's the best defense? Harrison Barnes. And I'm just like, guys, let the coaches coach. Let the experts be the experts. I don't need couch surfing coaches.
Fan.
Yeah, and so it made the experience. I'm like, this is a little overwhelming, so I may have to stay off Twitter during the games.
Patrick Donaldson on the chat says, my prediction was correct. I said Monk. Well done. Manny Too Legit says, I predicted at least three threes from Vezzi, and guess what? He made three. So a lot of people, I guess, went after the low-hanging fruit.
I tell you what, everybody loves an I told you so guy, right? Like, that's the best thing in the world, you know, to walk in the next day. Remember, I told you. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you. All right, you got it right.
That's all right. That's okay. How do you think we should look at the Kings differently now compared to how we looked at them before the preseason? And maybe you could say, oh, not really differently at all. I think there are a few things. I know in my own view. How do you think we should see the Kings differently, or do see the Kings differently now as opposed to what we thought of them before the preseason?
I don't see them differently at all. They are who I thought they were. De'Aaron Fox is great. Sabonis is great. Everything, you know, Kobe Jones, you know, he was great, but, you know, I don't think he moves the needle from 48 wins to 53 or anything like that. And so the Kings, to me, they couldn't prove anything or not prove anything in the preseason. You know, I said it a few days ago, I need to see the first 10, 15 games of the season.
Sure.
And then I can make up my mind, and then you can ask me that question. But the preseason, zero impact on what I think about this team.
I do think that it's kind of a relief that JaVale McGee played as well as he did. I know he turned the ball over a lot last night, but, you know, we weren't sure, and he probably was sure, but we weren't sure how much is left in the tank. So far as like, yes, there is a viable option as your backup center. Obviously, the two-guard situation has been discussed ad nauseum, and we'll talk more about it today. But that's certainly, I mean, the complexion of that position right now is different than we thought it was before the preseason started.
I don't think so. You're talking the shooting guard position.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the big man position.
Oh, no. I mean,
JaVale McGee and Alex Lynn, they're doing exactly what I thought they would. And, you know, the Kevin Huerter situation, and I think it's because of Huerter's struggles from the field. Like, if Kevin Huerter is the Kevin Huerter from the regular season, no offense, Colby Jones, no matter what you do, there's not even a discussion. Same thing with Chris Duarte. So it's more about what Kevin Huerter is not doing than I think what the other guys are doing. If Kevin Herter's hitting shots, we're not having this discussion. So, yeah, I agree with you. You know, it's an issue right now, an issue we didn't think we had going into the preseason. No, you're 100% right about that. And it's going to be on Kevin Huerter, man. He had the chance last night, and I don't think he got it done.
You know what was cool last night is that, again, preseason, I know, but the previous game, the Kings really fell apart in the fourth quarter, and last night they did just the opposite.
Yeah, exactly, and give them a lot of credit. They were down in the fourth quarter, actually, but outscored Utah 37-28, and I thought Malik Monk was the catalyst in that fourth. He was tremendous, making plays. Him and Colby Jones both were tremendous in that fourth, and that's what you want to see from the Sacramento Kings team. You know, the difference between last year and in previous years for the Kings, we always would look at the Kings and be like, all right, how are they going to lose this game? Last year, it turned into, how are we going to win this game in the fourth quarter? And we saw some of that last night.
Obviously, Kings fans are focused on all the Warrior games coming up and some Laker games. How difficult is an opener in Utah? Utah last year missed the playoffs. They overachieved early in the year. But I think there's a temptation to think, Utah's not that good. I don't think that's going to be an easy place in which to open the season.
No, I don't think so. And I was sitting right behind the Jazz bench, and I was looking over at that talent that they had on the bench. You could name Clarkson, Kelly Olynyk, John Collins, and of course the all-star Lauri Markkanen. And I'm like, Utah's going to be better than a lot of people. And nobody's talking about them, and I'm not saying they're a playoff team, but that's not going to be just an easy win. Opening night in Utah, the now Delta Center, they're calling it, again out there in Utah. This Jazz team has a lot of talent. And, I mean, look, Colin Sexton was going off last night. He was scoring buckets, and he's not even a starter, I don't think, on this team. Or, you know, he had some injuries, obviously, in Cleveland in last year. And so he's like their fifth option. And so this is going to be a tough game, I think, come next Wednesday.
Don't you think, Kyle, it's just another reminder of something that we were keenly aware of, the West? There's just not a lot of easy nights when you're playing somebody from the Western Conference.
Yeah, and every team in the West is talented, you know. And the thing about the Western Conference, when you look at it, you look at a team like Utah, it's not just young talent. You know, they got some veterans on that team. I mentioned Jordan Clarkson, Kelly Olynyk. He's been around forever. And then you look at a team like Houston. Last year, Houston was a young team. But now they got some veterans as well. So, you know, maybe San Antonio and Portland, and Portland even got some veterans now, too. You bring in DeAndre Ayton. You know, every team has talent, and now they have veteran talent. So that you know, counting on a team to fold in the fourth or Houston to turn the ball over 22, 23 times, we can't count on that this season. And so every team has some talent, and it's going to be some tough outs.
The thing that I just don't see that a lot of analysts are saying, oh, watch out for this team, I don't see why people are so excited about Minnesota. So maybe I'm just totally wrong, and I love Anthony Edwards.
Right.
Last year I thought, wow, that was a bad fit. They made a bad trade, and they're doubling down on it. But a lot of people, a lot of these pundits that make these lists and these power rankings, they're saying, watch out for Minnesota. I don't see it, Kyle. Maybe I'm wrong. Where is it? What am I missing?
No. You know what you're missing, and I actually agree with you, but we also have to remember, Anthony Edwards is great. He's ascending. Karl-Anthony Towns is pretty good, Whitey, and he only played in 29 games last season. And so I know early on it didn't look like him and Gobert fit, but a healthy Karl-Anthony Towns, 60 to 70 games, that changes things for Minnesota. I'm not saying they're a top four team or anything like that, but they're definitely going to be better than last year. They're an improved team versus last year. Mike Conley's in the system for another year. You got a healthy Karl-Anthony Towns.
I think they're very well coached. I do.
And Chris Finch is a great coach as well. And so I just think, you know, I'm not saying they're a top six seed or anything like that, but I think where people are saying they're better than what we think is because Karl-Anthony Towns, let's not forget, it was just like 5 years ago, 6 years. We were talking, is who's better, Carl Anthony Towns or Anthony Davis? Remember, that was an actual discussion in the NBA, and now you bring him back. Anthony Edwards is the alpha, and so they have some talent, and I think that's what people are counting on.
And the other team that, to me, is a mystery team in the West is just the Clippers, because there are so many variables. They could be so good, they could be so bad.
Right.
What are they going to do with Harden? If they get Harden, is he going to help? How much would they have to give up to get him? I really feel like right now we don't have a clear idea of what they are, but they have a possibility of being a really good team.
Yeah. And I think if you're Kawhi Leonard and you're Paul George, everything that's happened over the last 4 years when you guys have been together, that should fuel you for this year. Like, they have to hear the talk. They have to hear the criticisms, the Stephen A's and all these people on ESPN talking about every year we talk about the Clippers and they flame out. Both have an option to opt out after this season as well, talking about Kawhi and PG. And so this is their year. This is their final year, if I'm correct, in downtown L.A. They got the new arena that they're going to open next year. And so I think this you'll see a hungry Clippers team. But the problem with the Clippers, as we've seen, you know, over the last few years, they start off hungry. Yeah, it sounds good. But by January and February, those guys are out. And so I think that's why people are high on the Clippers. Obviously, on paper, they should be better. But are the guys going to play? That's the big question.
Now, Kyle, what are we to do this weekend? We don't have the 49ers to watch. We wait till Monday when you can hear it here. I know your team's playing Sunday night, the Eagles. That's going to be a great game, I would think, against Miami. But what do we do with that big open hole on our Sundays?
Get out. Hang with your family. You know, and spend time with your spouse. Like, be a husband for once. You know, we don't have to just be sitting at home watching the tube all weekend.
Is there another game on I can watch?
There's some college football, some golf. Like, trust me, I'll be watching something. But we got Fan Fest at Golden One Center this Saturday afternoon. I'll be up in the building for that, me and Katie. So, make sure you come out for that, Sac Kings fans.
Absolutely. If you have any questions, because Kyle's going to have a kind of Q&A going.
Yeah.
Any questions for him today on the text line or on the chat, fire away, and we'll get you ready, right? Well, like we did yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
You seemed to like that yesterday.
Yeah, but you also have to filter some of the questions. Like, you know, it got to be PG, you know, parental guide. It can't be any R-rated stuff going on. And no slander. I'm not about the slander. It's Friday. It's the start of my weekend. I don't want no slander today.
Yeah. So whatever questions you have for Kyle, he helps you with information. You help him get ready for FanFest. And we're going to take a quick break. Coming back with something I've been looking forward to here for many, many weeks, because we've got the music now, the full production for Drapes Takes.
Drapes Takes?
Drapes Takes is next right here, Sacktown Sports. Sacramento State football. Back at home this Saturday night, nationally televised primetime game versus Montana State. The Bobcats kick off 7:30. Get your tickets at hornetsports.com. So drive, guys. Last night, of course, the Kings, they end up winning a preseason game. No big deal, except Kyle was there. He says there was a sense of relief. You'd rather win one than not. If you're going to keep score, you might as well win the game.
Yeah, you might as well win the game. And I tell you, watching Mike Brown and watching both coaches out there, it was clear they weren't just about developing players. They were trying to win the game last night.
Kings win it 116-113, and that brings us to Drapes Takes.
Calm down, Lion. Calm down. Take it easy, man. Just take it easy.
I love it. I love it. Simone on the ones and twos back there. It is time for Drapes Takes. This song right here taking me back to my college days in Philadelphia back in the early 90s. You know, back when I had a head full of hair.
Uh-huh.
I had the afro going,
really?
The shag in the back. Oh, yeah, man. This is back in the early 90s. But let me dive right into it, Whitey. My first take after watching last night. The big position, the center position, is all set. We are all good to go. No Domantas Sabonis last night. So what? My guy, JaVale McGee, 12 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and put some respect on Alex Len's name, 7 points, 7 rebounds, 5
what?
Block shots. I thought the bigs were phenomenal. Sure, McGee had some turnovers, 3 turnovers, but when I watched that, when JaVale McGee is hitting 15-footers, 16-footers, I'm like, oh, snap. He's pretty good. Like, he's doing well. And so I like the big position. And, you know, one thing I'll say about Alex Len, he does everything the coach asks him for. But when is this guy going to get some respect from the officials, Whitey? I'm watching that game. He goes up, The rule of verticality, that's what we're taught in school, makes a great defensive play in his whistle for the foul. He took a shot to the face
grill.
As well.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so my first take is the center position will be a strength even behind Domantas Sabonis this coming season.
I would just say this. One of those five blocks, I forget whose shot he blocked, but there was as audible a swat as I've ever heard
yes.
watching a basketball.
Yes. Right, because somebody drove to the basket.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Talen Horton Tucker, maybe, and it was like a volleyball spike out there.
It
was impressive. So that's my first take. My second take, my guy, Malik Monk, put y'all on notice in case you forgot who he was. You know, Malik hasn't had a great preseason. It's not like, hold up. I'm not going to take it easy. I'm not going to take it easy, Simone. My guy, Malik Monk, he came up huge in the clutch. And the thing about Malik, what I saw last night, first half, he was just ho-hum, you know. It's just a preseason game. But when it came time to winning, he stepped up in a big way. Malik Monk leading the scorers with 23 points. And how about the 8 assists? And so we talk about who's the backup point guard. Let's not forget, in the playoffs against the Warriors, Malik Monk ran a lot of backup point guard. And so in case you forgot who Malik Monk was, he reminded us last night.
I saw the same thing you did in the fourth quarter. Malik kind of looked around. I mean, these guys are fine, but there's not a lot of offense here. So if we're going to win, I'm going to have to supply the offense. So, all right, here we go. And he did.
Exactly.
Dominated the game.
That's Drape's take number two. Now, Drape's take number three.
Number three.
I got to go to my guy, Sasha Vezenkov. That's right. Sasha, I was worried about you in that first half. I was like, uh-oh, here we go. He's struggling once again. But what he did in the third quarter showed me, you know what? This guy has talent. His basketball IQ is high. 10 points in the third quarter. And I don't care about the three-pointers, Whitey. I don't care about making shots. I care about the way you play the game. And when I'm watching Sasha, there was one play where he cut back door, got the pass from McGee maybe, or Alex Lynn, and threw it down into the bucket. The thing about Sasha that he has to learn, it doesn't have to be three or nothing else. You can vary your game, something like we're seeing with Keegan this year. I would like to see Sasha take the ball to the basket a couple of times early instead of just settling for threes. I thought he did that in the third quarter.
He had 6 rebounds, too.
Yes, yes. And he was great rebounding the ball. And so everybody that was worried about Sasha, concerned about Sasha, no need to be. This guy's going to be a project that develops the first month of the season, gets used.
Not
there yet.
Making strides, though. Yeah,
making strides. What I saw yesterday in that third quarter gave me encouragement for Sasha. And that's Drape's take after the Kings get their first preseason win. You got me fired up, man.
Yeah, you got us fired up. That's just a preseason. We're getting that excited about the preseason.
I think the music helps. Man.
Sure, sure.
Her girl Simone hooked it up. Thank you, Simone.
Just threw something together quickly. Thank you.
I'm glad you said what you said about Malik because I noticed the same thing. And he had been okay in this preseason, and that's understandable. Somebody on the text line yesterday even said, you know, Malik's just kind of gliding through this preseason a little bit, and that's fine. But then last night he realized, all right, the team needs me to do something. And he was easily the best player on the floor.
Yes, he was easily the best player on the floor. And I said he finished with 23 points. Let me pull up that fourth quarter box score real quick because, you know, that's the thing about this Kings team. They're going to be in some close games. And who's going to step up outside of De'Aaron Fox? Malik Monk had 16 points, Whitey, in that fourth quarter. He was 6 of 11. I thought the first few quarters, you know what, he was just playing a good floor game, letting everybody else get going. But when it came time to win, the veteran that he is, he stepped up. He played the entire fourth, mind you. He didn't come out the game at all, and he finished with 16 points.
Yeah, Colby Jones was 3 of 4, 3 of 3 beyond the arc. One of the things I noticed there, speaking of that fourth quarter, and as we said, as we know, the Kings didn't have a good fourth quarter against the Warriors, but last night in the fourth quarter, they'd had another one of those not very good shooting nights from beyond the arc, but last night in the fourth quarter, they made 7 of 11.
Yes, they got hot from three. How about Colby Jones, a perfect 3 for 3?
Yep.
Can we give him some love? A Drape's take, a part due, if you will, an added Drape's take.
Is that even allowed?
I don't know. I make the rules here, Whitey. You know that. But Colby Jones was fantastic. Everybody knows that. Mike Brown talked about him. Malik Monk talked about him. Colby Jones is he's giving you everything that you could have asked for of a second round pick of a rookie in this preseason.
It was interesting after the game, Mike Brown talking about how Colby Jones is such a good cutter, which is something as fans we don't talk a lot about. Hey, that guy's a really good cutter. Yeah. But Mike Brown says, in our offense, we like to cut a lot, and you need to cut hard every time. And he says, Colby doesn't cut hard most of the time. He cuts hard every time. And for a young player to have that much confidence, understanding of the offense, and to play with that much passion and aggression, it's Brock Purdy-esque, as I said yesterday.
Brock Purdy-esque.
It's like Brock Purdy last year, yeah.
Let me ask you this, though, Whitey, because we talked about plus-minus and how it might not mean a whole lot. But I'm going to use plus-minus for the case for the second unit last night, the guys that came off the bench. Malik Monk, a plus 18. Alex Len, a plus 23. Kessler Edwards, shout out to Kessler, plus 13. Colby, plus 13. Keon Ellis, plus 10. And so, you know, I know it's in a small vacuum, but I thought all those guys off the bench contributed in a big way last night.
Yeah, if you look at those numbers as a group, it's clear. And I know Brendan Nunes mentioned this today in his story at SacktownSports.com. All of the starters finished underwater in their
plus minus.
So clearly the bench played a lot better than the starters did last night.
Yeah, the bench got it done. And, you know, I mentioned Alex Len. Alex Len in the fourth quarter alone was a plus 13. Think about that. He played almost the entire fourth, 10 minutes, 49 seconds. He was a plus 13. And so I don't think people understand what Alex Len gives this team. He's not going to be on SportsCenter. He's not going to get you 20 and 10. But what he does is he is a smart basketball player, knows defensive positioning well, can block shots, a great practice player. Guys love his personality. He's a funny guy, and so I'm glad they brought him back.
The thing I admire the most about him, and while I was doing Warrior stuff, they had a couple guys like this. Damian Lee was one. Juan Toscano-Anderson was one. They had guys that, and Alex Len is one. You might not play for a long time. You don't know when you're going to play. And then all of a sudden, like we saw at the end of last year, hey, you're playing. And that's not an easy thing to be ready. Right. And Alex Len does that very well. I think that's really admirable.
He's a true professional, you know, because he's not going to whine. He's not going to complain. He's just going to stay ready. And we saw that last year. And last night, he was tremendous. And, you know, sometimes you need guys like that who know their role. No, you know what? We might not call your name tonight, and you got to be okay about it. You can't be mumbling and grumbling and complaining to assistant coaches, and Alex Len is that guy.
So it's the Jazz again, right, Wednesday night? Not the same Jazz because they'll be playing more of their guys, but that same team for the opener.
Yeah, same team. They'll have all their guys. Like I said, it'll be our first time seeing John Collins in a Utah Jazz uniform in a regular season.
That I can't believe he was finally traded.
Right.
It seemed like 7 years in a row that John Collins is available.
Yeah, so we get to see him. And remember, the Kings and Jazz, they played some great games a season ago. The one here at Golden 1 Center, Kevin Huerter, the big three. And then De'Aaron Fox, the game winner on the road. Lauri Markkanen thought he had the game winner. And so these two teams, it seems like they always battle. So that's Wednesday night.
Thank you for Drape's Takes. Thank you, Simone. When we come back, the most interesting Kings preview we've seen all year. We've got it for you on The Drive, guys. Sacktown Sports.
Your new home for 49ers football in the 916, Sacktown Sports.
We're going to take a look at one of the more interesting Kings previews in just a moment here. Before we do that, Kyle Draper, you being a professional sports announcer.
Yes.
I'm wondering what you think of the, I guess you could call it a controversy. Well, whatever you call it, a lot of fans were not happy last night when Al Michaels missed a touchdown in the Saints-Jags game. Christian Kirk caught a pass, went down the sideline, and he went into the end zone, but Al Michaels apparently thought he went out of bounds at the one-yard line. It was confirmed for a touchdown. Al Michaels had said, and he's out of bounds. And a lot of fans were very upset and said, how can you miss a touchdown? I know it's not easy. You as a professional sports announcer, what do you make of a situation?
I mean,
like
mistakes
this?
Happen, obviously. Sure. Al Michaels, we know he's one of the games great. He's a legend. You know, he's awesome. I think what fans are upset more so about last night is, where do you get the 1 yard line from? Like, it, to me, the touchdown looked clear as day. And so I get it. We make mistakes sometimes. Sometimes you don't see the angle. You don't get a good view of it, especially when you're calling football. Maybe you're not looking at the monitor. You're looking at the field, and it's hard to tell. But he never went out of bounds. So it's like Al Michaels just made something up. Where did that come from?
And because he thought that it was out of bounds and not a touchdown, he undersold the touchdown, and that's another criticism that people have had of him. Anyway, Simone says we have the Al Michaels call of the Christian Kirk touchdown last night.
Lawrence fires. That's caught on the run. Christian Kirk inside the 20. He goes, and Christian Kirk takes the ball all the way to about the 1 yard line. They're going to spot it as he thinks he scored the touchdown, and they're going to call it a touchdown now. 44 yards for Christian Kirk. Into the end zone he goes.
Wow. Yeah, so
That's painful, Whitey. That one was painful to listen to because he had no idea. And I feel for the guy, I get it, but man, at that level, to miss that call, like I said, I thought it was a clear touchdown. Like, when I watched the video, when I watched it, it was like, oh, he's in. And so...
And don't you have people,
right,
all kinds of people helping you, telling you,
yeah,
presumably,
people in
touchdown,
your ear,
it's a touchdown,
you
it's
got
a touchdown.
The spotter right next to you, you got your partner right there, you know. And the problem with that call Al had yesterday, and remember, Al Michaels is a legend. I'm not saying
anything. No
matter anything,
what, yes.
He is a legend. But even if it was out at the one, he still undersold that, too.
Yeah,
it was just
right.
Like, you know, it was, that was
a big
play,
right?
Yeah. And so he undersold everything about that play, and then it's sort of like missing a game-winning home run or something like that, or a game-winning basket in basketball, or a game-winning goal in hockey. You know, those are the moments you got to be ready for, and it seemed like Al Michaels, he just whiffed on that one.
Yeah, and it's troubling to many because, as I said, as we know, a lot of people have been saying that he's been underselling touchdowns even when he knows it's a touchdown.
Yeah.
He hasn't been getting excited enough. And he said, what do you want me to do?
I mean, thing is, he's seen thousands of touchdowns in his career, too.
It's, I did the miracle on ice.
Right,
I'm not going to get excited about Christian Kirk.
Right, but between these two teams, I'm not getting excited about that. And so, you know, Al Michaels been around forever. But, man, I could see why fans would be upset about that call.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if Kings fans will be upset by this. Certainly not at first, but then the more they read, perhaps they will be. There's an excellent piece in The Athletic by the writers who cover the Pacific Division, including Anthony Slater. And by the way, Anthony Slater joins us next hour to discuss this, and all guests come to you from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. So you've got Jovan Buha, who writes he covers the Lakers for The Athletic, and a guy named Law Murray, who covers the Clippers. So those two and Anthony Slater kind of doing a roundtable on the division. And what's interesting is that Anthony Slater puts it this way. I'm splitting my rankings, he says, or writes, into two parts. Regular season standings predictions. Kings 1, Lakers, Warriors, Suns, Clippers. Then he says, true contention once you get into the postseason, Lakers, Warriors, Suns, Clippers, Kings. So he's the only person I've heard split it that way. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy, you know, we talk about some of these East Coast guys and they don't watch the games. He covers the team.
So he knows what he's talking about.
But how about that? He has the Kings winning the division, but then thinks they'll be they won't have much of a shot at advancing compared to the chances of the other teams in the division once the playoffs start.
I think that's because of lack of experience in that area. When you look at the other Western Conference teams, Pacific Division teams that we're talking about, Phoenix, they got a multitude of veterans, of guys that have played in big games. Obviously, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, you know, Brad Beal back in the day. Washington actually made the playoffs under Brad Beal. You know, Lakers, we know about their Clippers as well, and Warriors. And so all those other teams have more playoff success. And so I get it. And we could say all those other teams are veteran teams that probably won't treat the regular season as importantly as Sacramento. So I understand it. And, you know, what's interesting about this, though, is when you look at the Pacific Division, Are all the teams going to make the playoffs again? Like, think of it. That's a deep division.
Right.
That's the best division. Like, who's a weak link in this division?
Right. Yeah, Law Murray says this is the most accomplished division in the NBA. All five teams making the playoffs and having good reason to believe they will win a playoff series.
Exactly. And you're right. If I'm the Kings, sure, I understand what you're saying, Anthony Slater. But in our mind, we can beat the Warriors. We can beat the like, we should have went advanced last year. It's just going to be a dogfight. You know what's interesting about the Western Conference? There are probably 10 teams that feel like they should at least win one playoff series, you know? But only four teams can actually do it, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, New Orleans with the Zion probably thinks we should be good enough to advance. Memphis, Minnesota, I mean, every team, Dallas, if they get there, in their minds, they feel like they should at least win one series. Only problem is only four teams will do it.
Now, this gentleman, Jovan Buhat, I don't know him. He's a fine writer. I read some of his stuff. He says he's out on the Kings, and he says, I'm prepared to have egg on my face if I'm wrong. But you know why he says he's out on the Kings?
Why?
It's the same thing everyone else says.
It better not be the health.
Yeah. Or they won 48 games last year with some of the best health in the league. They're also due for injury regression.
My gosh, that's injury such a lazy regression. Take. That is a lazy. Who's this guy again?
This is Jovan Buhat.
I can't wait to talk to Anthony about this. That's such a lazy, uninformed take because you could use health or lack thereof for every team in the NBA. You can spin it that way. And so why use that for set? That's because you don't have anything else, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He says that could offset their progress, and injury regression could knock them down to the mid or even low 40s in wins. Again, I give him credit because he says, look, I could be wrong, could have egg on my face. But, yeah, that's where he's going. They all agree, by the way, or I think they all agree, talking about bust-out players this year. Everybody thinks Keegan is a great pick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and they're all right about that. Keegan, I mean, let's keep it real, though, about Keegan Murray. This dude was the number four overall pick. Let's not act like what he's doing is unexpected or this is what he's supposed to be doing. Right, exactly. This is who he is. This is what he's supposed to be doing. He's supposed to make this leap from year one to year two. So I'm glad everybody recognizes that and recognizes how good he is.
Mm-hmm. How good do the Kings need him to be?
I hate to put it all on one guy.
But they need him.
They need
him,
right? Yeah. They need him to be the Keegan Murray we saw the other night in that game against Golden State, night in and night out. I would like to see Kings fans, and tell me if I'm wrong on this. I know De'Aaron Fox is the stud. I know Domantas Sabonis is the three-time All-Star. But Whitey, I would like to see a number of games where we watched the Kings and we say Keegan Murray was the best player tonight. Like, it doesn't always have to be De'Aaron Fox rescuing us in the fourth quarter. Sabonis getting a triple-double. How come Keegan can't have a 32, 33-point night? He hit a game winner. And so he has to be great, I think, for this team this season.
I don't think it's talked about enough, the fact that one of the reasons the Kings didn't go out and do more is because they assume that a lot they would get from bringing someone in, they can get from Keegan Murray.
Yes, yes, you're right. Everybody talks about a big three and, oh, go out there and get Kuzma. I was one of those guys. Go out there and get so-and-so. When realistically, inside the organization, they viewed Keegan Murray as that guy.
Yeah.
You go out there and get Kyle Kuzma, what does that do to Keegan Murray and his development? And so he's that guy. I've said he averaged 12.4, I think it was, last season. I need that to be 17, 18, 19 this season. He's that good.
Did you see Kyle Kuzma's hair this week?
No, I didn't.
He's dyed blonde, and then it has like a red spot, but it's like lipstick.
Yeah, like a
really?
Little kiss.
Got kiss.
A little kiss right on.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I see that. What is that? See, but Kyle Kuzma's a different guy.
Sure.
Right. On surface, it may look one thing, but behind the scenes, it's a message of some sort, right?
Okay,
like, it's something. I don't know. I don't know. But
Mike Breen was cooking him.
Was he?
So upset. Yeah.
Kyle Kuzma is one of those guys that can get away with. I'm looking at it right now. This is pretty bad.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying.
No, I can say it's bad, Whitey.
Look.
You don't have to. I'll say it for you. This is. I got so many questions and no answers, right?
Well, it's a long season. Hopefully we'll get some of the answers. And we hope to get the answer to this when we come back. Andre Iguodala retiring today. Is Andre Iguodala a Hall of Famer? Next with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.
Your flagship station for the Beam Team. Sacktown Sports.
Lillard from the right wing, knocking down the three ball. So immediately he's making his presence felt. 21-19 Utah, leading at 4 minutes to play in this opening quarter.
Malik Monk put the team on his back in the fourth quarter last night. Dominated in the scoring department at 16 in the fourth quarter. And he also had 8 assists on the night. And again, that's, I know I keep saying this, it's one thing about Malik that I didn't know he was capable of doing that he showed last year. I mean, he's a legit, he can be a big-time playmaker.
Yeah, he can. And, you know, his ability to turn the corner and get downhill and find whether it's the lob, the dunker spot, the 3 points, like, his head is always up. And, you know, that's one thing, you know, he talked about yesterday in working with Colby Jones. He said, I'm going to look for you, young fella. And so Malik Monk is a leader. We talk about Domas and De'Aaron as leaders. Malik Monk is a leader for this franchise as well. And when he's playing like that, remember, you could argue he was the best player in the postseason for the Kings last year. You know, De'Aaron played great, but he had the injury. I thought Malik was probably the most consistent guy for the playoffs for the Kings.
He had that edge that seemed to kind of wear down at the corners a little bit against the Warriors, but Malik didn't wear down. He was...
Right, he was up.
Yeah.
He was up for every game. Yeah, exactly. And so, big year for him. Contract year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know it's early. I know it's early, Kings fans. But already, I'm saying we need to bring this guy back.
Yep.
Already, in my mind, because it's not just about what we see on the floor. It's the locker room. It's the energy that provides, like you said, the edge a little bit, too. And so,
And he's very well-liked.
Yeah,
huh? Everyone
well-liked,
loves being around
fan favorite, inside the organization. You know, he's just a different dude, a different kind of cat, man. He's full of personality. And, you know, he's one of those guys, when he comes into the room, he lights up the room, you know. You can notice, you know, when he's in the building.
He had a lot to do with the turnaround in the Kings culture. And speaking of culture, there's a guy that had a lot to do with the Warriors championship culture that retired today, Andre Iguodala. 19 seasons.
Wow.
And the Warriors apparently wanted him back this year. And, you know, it looked like he was done before last year. But he just announced today that he is retiring. Andre Iguodala. Is Andre Iguodala, in your mind, a Hall of Famer?
Hell no. No. As much as I love Andre, remember, he was a former Philadelphia 76er. So
right.
He, you know, my Sixers hometown team.
That was before he won one, two, three.
Exactly. Before he actually won
championship
four
rings.
Championships. You know, I think he was trending that way. He had some great seasons in Philly. But when you actually look at the totality of his career, sure, he has the four championships. Sure, he has the finals MVP. He was a big part of their championship run. We understand that. He was huge for them. But his numbers fell off big time. And when you look at Andre Iguodala, he's a one-time All-Star. Sure, he's a four-time champion, two-time All-Defensive Team, All-Rookie in finals. The resume, he just misses out. In my opinion.
I agree with you. He's about as close as you can come, in my book, for what that's worth, to being a Hall of Famer without being one. I don't get a vote. Do you get a
vote? I don't get a vote. Okay. I may have to arrange one. I've been around the league long enough, right?
Right.
Like, what's going on here?
Right.
I should get one. But he's great, and he's vital. And you speak to anybody that's ever played with him, those guys with the Warriors, they say nothing. But if Andre Iguodala is a Hall of Famer, is Robert Horry a Hall of Famer?
Well, that's a good point you raised, because that's my issue with this a candidacy like this. You can't put everybody who's a good player on a great team in the Hall of Fame.
Right. This isn't the 60s with the Celtics when they had like 9 Hall of Famers on their squad. Like,
you know,
it's just not that way anymore. And so, you know, I don't think rings, when it comes to Hall of Fame, if you weren't the guy, I don't think rings help you as much as, let's say, you know, you got to add a points. Like, when it comes to the Hall of Fame, what's interesting about it, we play to win the game. You play to win championships. But you could be on a bad team and put up numbers and become a Hall of Famer and never achieve postseason success. But if you win championships and you don't put up the numbers, like, you got to have the numbers. The numbers are the most important thing when it comes to the Hall of Fame.
I think with him, the big foundation for any case you'd make for him being a Hall of Famer is, hey, he was the Finals MVP. And that's great. He was great in that series against the Cavaliers. But Steph was MVP that year.
Right.
Even in the finals, Steph should have been the MVP.
He should have been. Right.
He had one really bad game, and he had been the MVP, and I think the voters looked at it and said, Steph Curry wasn't as good as we thought, and Andre Iguodala was better than we thought, and he guarded LeBron, so there you go. He was the MVP. I mean, he played great, but I don't think he should have been the MVP of the finals.
No, I agree with that. Some said LeBron should have been MVP, even though he lost. You know, like, you could argue that Andre – the only reason he got the final is because of defense, but LeBron still played extremely. It wasn't like LeBron got shut down. And I'm looking at Compio here on our YouTube chat, and yes, I read that as well. Chris Bosh is a Hall of Famer, so Andre is a Hall of Famer. What do you think about that? Because I'm about to shoot that down.
I don't buy it. Bosh was a better player than Andre Iguodala.
Can I tell you something about Chris Bosh, Whitey? And trust me, I've had this argument thousands of times. Chris Bosh was an 8-time All-Star. End of discussion. You can't compare Chris Bosh and Andre Iguodala, a 1-time All-Star versus an 8-time All-Star. Please, Compio, you're supposed to know better than that. I mean, Chris Bosh.
Watch it, because, you know, Compio's cousin is married to
Ray
Allen.
Right.
No,
exactly.
I got that wrong.
No,
something like that.
No, I think that's right. I think you're right. His cousin, so, and he stayed at a Holiday Express, so he knows it all. So that's ridiculous to compare Chris Bosh, a guy that scored, what? Let me pull up Chris Bosh's numbers.
The thing about Bosh is he did a lot of it in Toronto, so
right.
That's why some of it people never even realized it was happening.
Right, exactly. People, you know, didn't see, they didn't have postseason success or anything like that. But when you look at Chris Bosh, like I said, 8-time All-Star. Let me look at the points, total points for his career right here. I'm pulling it up. 17,000 points in the NBA. You want to know Andre Iguodala's points in the NBA? Hold up. Give me one second here, Whitey. 13. Chris Bosh got like 5,000 more points than Andre Iguodala. And Chris Bosh was a vital, no, I'm talking vital member of 3 championship teams. I'm not buying it.
By the way, Andre Iguodala got something wrong when he was talking about great teams. And this is neither here nor there. But he said, look, we won 4 championships. Who's done that? He said, the Celtics did it. The Bulls did it. The Lakers did it. The Celtics did it. The other Celtics. And he said, and we did it. And that's it. He's leaving out the Spurs. The Spurs won 5. You can't.
Right.
Yeah, the Spurs won 5. Yeah, so he forgot them.
He forgot them, yeah, of course.
Yeah. He nearly became a king, or at least it looked like it was going to be close. 2013,
yes.
Sam Amick reported the Kings offered Andre Iguodala a 4-year deal worth $52 million. Woj said it was $56 million, and then the Kings, they pulled the deal. So before Iguodala could decide, they pulled the offer. And according to reports, the Kings made the offer, and then they weren't happy that it was taking so long to decide. They wanted him, hey, do you want this or not? He's like, well, I don't know. So they said, no, forget it.
Right. And, and when you look at Andre Iguodala, when he went to the Warriors, his game changed. And that hurt, in my opinion, his Hall of Fame candidacy. Sure, it helped him win. He won some titles, obviously. But, you know, and you can argue, he's a 4-time champ, right?
Yes.
But really, that last championship, yeah, he wasn't really, it wasn't like, you know.
They
would have won it without him, you know,
yeah,
exactly.
They had him on the court at the end. You were probably there in Boston.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of ceremonial. Hey, he's on the floor with the other guys,
right.
But he didn't have anything to do with it.
And let's keep it real, two of those championships were because Kevin Durant joined the Warriors, too. Let's not act like Andre Iguodala was this all-star, all-level guy, you know, one of the top 2 or 3 Warriors. I mean, on his best day, he was the 4th best Warrior. Most of the time, he was 5th or 6th or 7th best Warrior.
But Draymond's a Hall of Famer, right?
Draymond,
I know,
is
some basketball people that will say, I don't know.
Draymond was different because Draymond, without Draymond, they don't win four championships. The Warriors still win championships without Andre Iguodala. Mm-hmm.
To me, and I think we agree, Andre Iguodala is really close, but yeah. to me, doesn't yeah. quite meet the level of a Hall of Famer.
Exactly. And I'm not knocking him as a player. He was trending that way in Philly, in Denver, but when he got to Golden State, his game transformed. He had to change his game, and that hurt his Hall of Fame candidacy.
When we come back, we will give you one NBA scout's biggest question regarding your Sacramento Kings with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.